welcome to a quick Conversations of Change podcast with Dr. Jen Fram. We have a change chat with one of the leaders in the change management field. Hello, welcome to today's change chat. Today I'm really super excited to be talking to Rita Myerson, who is an organisational change expert and doctoral candidate in New York City. You only have to look at Rita's LinkedIn profile and see this amazing diversity and incredibly vibrant list of work and projects that Rita has worked on. And for the IABC listeners out there, she is also a Gold Quill winner for a work with Towers Watson. So Rita, welcome to today's Change Chat.
Thank you so much for having me. I am humbled and honored to be here and talking about what I am most passionate about, organizational change.
Yeah, that's so cool. So Rita, tell me, how did you get into change work in the first place?
So I actually was quite fortunate. At the University of Pennsylvania, where I went to university undergrad, I was biological basis of behavior, so neuroscience and psychology major, and spent much time at the hospital doing research. And I decided that I was a bit more interested in the whole person and kind of the human behavior versus the microbiology of the disease of the day when I was working in a radiation oncology internship. Yeah. And decided to lean more towards psychology, mm-hmm. and then did a summer internship because of the influence of Wharton at Merrill Lynch, and that was in 1993. I came back to Penn and took two courses in the Wharton MBA program, and a management professor called me out and mm-hmm. suggested that I look into the field of, you know, organizational behavior and at the HR consulting firms and at the time. And I went on and pursued a master's degree in industrial organizational psychology at NYU and did many courses at Stern, the business school, where I then was introduced to management consulting and started my career at Anderson Consulting, now Accenture, in 1996, 20 years ago. So Accenture really introduced me to change management, as it was integral to work at the time of implementing large-scale systems at global organizations.
Yeah, look, Anderson, it produces people with such great pedigree in change. In terms of the people that you work with, certainly here in Australia, if they've come through Anderson's before or prior to Accenture, you can just tell there's something about them, you know. So, and so obviously that ignited your passion for change, or were you already converted at that point?
I think that I certainly had the academic background, but from a practitioner standpoint, they're really, you know, unparalleled in their ability to, you know, take human behavior and turn it into kind of frameworks and tools that were understandable in the workplace at, yeah. you know, at Fortune 500 companies and enable people to change during very difficult times. And they've been doing this for, you know, 25 years. They really are.
Yeah.
They're top of the game. Change navigation is a term, and stakeholder mm-hmm. management I learned at Accenture, and I've really followed, you know, it ignited the passion, as you said, and I followed that path going forward.
Excellent. So how do you fill your days at the moment? What's a typical day in the world of Rita?
So I given that I'm a change expert, I would say that I don't really have a typical routine. So I have a large tolerance for change and ambiguity. And I have client work that fills my day. I'm also a mid-career doctoral candidate at the mm-hmm. George Washington University. So I'm ABD status, which is, as you know, all but dissertation. I need to finish that up. I spent the last 3 years in an intensive cohort program there with many in the military, as well as government workers, international, global business students as well. And it's a 27-year-old program. I am truly grateful for that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I am the mother of an 11-year-old boy. I've been a single parent for a long time now. And needless to say, I'm pretty busy. I keep my days busy with that type of work, and I find some quiet time doing yoga and mindful meditation, which I typically don't bring into my client work unless it's called for.
Well, it sounds like you'd have plenty of opportunity there with all that going on to be managing that, to be embracing the tolerance of ambiguity and change. That's quite a full life that's going on there. Tell me a bit more about the doctoral studies. What led you to pursue that? What was the motivation between wanting to go deeper into that?
So at the time, this is about 5 years ago, I had taken on a project at BlackRock, which is now the largest asset money, largest money manager with assets under management of, I think, well over $4 trillion. Mm-hmm. And they were at a very interesting point in their history. At that point, they were turning 25 years old, and it still was founder-led, but they were building next-generation leadership. And how are they going to transform the founder-led culture into a next-generation run company? And I worked with such wonderful leaders that encouraged me to kind of complete out my doctoral studies in organizational change and leadership. And I went on search of finding a kind of executive program that would enable me to continue working, take care of my son. And George Washington University has a doctoral program in human and organizational learning. I focused in on understanding and researching organizational culture, particularly not only how the leaders influence, we know that leaders, influence and pretty much define the organizational culture or the founders, but how that then through microcultures kind of disseminates and continues on throughout the organization as organizations are global, large. So that really has been the crux of my studying, and my dissertation will focus in on organizational identity, which is the kind of the academic term for culture, mm-hmm. and kind of the emerging power dynamics that happen during an acquisition when an organization takes on a new company, and what happens to kind of the new culture that emerges when an acquisition or merger takes place.
Wow, that sounds like it would be for very interesting reading. One of the things that was striking me when you're talking about that is that often there can be quite a level of disrespect between academia and practitioner land, with academics being dismissive of practitioners not having rigor and structure, and practitioners being dismissive of academics of having their heads in the cloud and not grounded in reality. And I guess to some extent there's this bridging space of the pracademic, the person who has both and is carving out.
Exactly. I like that term, the pracademic. That is me.
Yeah.
Although I probably would even say I'm more of a practitioner.
So I guess what I'm curious about is you're just before doing your dissertation, to what extent is your academic work influencing your client work at the moment, or the other way around, your practice work is influencing your academic work?
I think that it kind of works both ways. And the George Washington program was designed by a academic, and its roots and foundation, it's a scholar practitioner program. I would say I lean more on the practitioner side, but how it influences my work, it's a couple of things. I think that the empirical research certainly helps me kind of lead with my practitioner focus and the work I do with clients. And it gives a little bit of, as you said, rigor and confidence to the solutions that I work to, you know, customize for my clients. I don't believe in a one size fits all, although I was trained at, you know, the large consulting firms. I really do believe each, you know, project approach is unique given we're working with human beings and it's not a computer program. And even though you might be implementing SAP or PeopleSoft or SuccessFactors or any large system, you're still managing human behavior. And at the core, humans resist change. And how you manage that is informed, let's say, by some, you know, by what's going on, the context, as well as the industry, and how each individual kind of shows up and might resist or take on the change. And I really wouldn't have been able to solidify my approach without the rigor of the doctoral program. And I think it's quite a unique space, as you know, and the ability to, it's an art and a science, you know, in some, and I think in order to be effective, we know, you know, kind of that running number that is out there that 70% of change efforts fail with mergers and acquisitions. It's even higher in terms of achieving the financial targets that, you know, the street or the organizations kind of compel to Wall Street. And you really need to understand the human components, the organization, the deep-seated organizational culture. So my doctoral work, to come full circle, has really informed my unique approach and how I work with executives on the organizational change, especially at the middle manager or the change agent level. That's really instrumental in kind of leading and sustaining the change. And I wouldn't be at that point in an ability to understand the sophisticated nuances without the doctoral work.
Yeah, right, right. Tell me, if someone was thinking of doing their doctoral studies in organizational change, what advice would you give them at this point?
I think it depends where you are in your life, right? So you've got to look at your life. Fortunately, we're at a time in 2016, nearing 2017, 2020, where we look at the whole person. You need to look at where you are in life and kind of what purpose do you feel that the doctoral program would do for you. If you're doing this straight out of undergrad, I do think some practical work is absolutely necessary. You need to understand the context of business and kind of be in the, you need to be in the trenches and understand how organizations work. You need to understand the infrastructure as well as the levers that, you know, leaders have and the power and influence within an organization, both direct and indirect. So that's one piece. It's a huge time commitment. So you need to understand that it's like a full-time job on top of having your regular job to pay the bills. And if you have a, you have a family life, a personal life, you have outside interests, we all need kind of complementary pieces to keep us fulfilled. And it's a really an exercise in time management at the end of the day. You really need to be maniacal with your time, know your priorities and your goals, and how you're going to kind of fit each piece. And I know you did your doctorate in record time in 3 years. I'm going into year four now. You probably would agree with me. It's an exercise in time management.
Ferocious time management. Yes, I would violently agree. It's very easy to let it slide and continue. But I think you're right. You have to look at it in context of the whole to be able to determine, you know, which way you go with it in terms of what is the format you do it in, you know.
And I think the professors at my university are so, they're such champions. I mean, the rigor, the academic rigor, believe me, is there. It's so intense and very stressful, but they also are incredibly supportive and want to get you to the finish line. Yeah. And they pride themselves that 70% of their graduates over the past 27, they're the 28th year of this program complete. Yeah. And that statistic is much higher than most doctoral programs, which is without even having gotten into it. I mean, that's how I made my decision. I said, all right, yeah. I can tell yeah. these people are there to help me complete this mm-hmm. and they will help me get it done no matter what. And as a single parent, living in New York City, a very expensive city to live in. Mm. They have been extremely supportive in terms of, you know, enabling me to achieve my goal of completing this.
That's fantastic.
So let's keep fingers crossed of completing it. We're not there yet. They always say you're only at halftime when you finish your comprehensive exams and you finish your coursework in ABD. They're like, you're only at halftime in the game. That's not so, you know, I mean, there's a balance of fear, but yeah. You know, they want to see you succeed.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. So you've got this deep, deep wealth of expertise around change leadership from your practitioner-based expertise in your consulting world and now, of course, the academic. For the leaders of change listening into this podcast, what's the highlights of what they need to be thinking about at the moment in today's business context? Where do you think it's really at for them at the moment?
Simply put, if you are responsible for leading change, you really need to understand stakeholder management. I think that is key. In some organizations, I hear the term socialization. In other organizations, I hear stakeholder management. Wherever you are in the change process, whether you're the executive sponsor or you are the change agent on the ground making it happen, you need to surround yourself with the right people, mm-hmm. with the right skills, that are going to help you complete the change. And if you identify early on, again, whether you're in the executive sponsorship role or you're in the change agent role, you need to identify the right people. And early on, I've heard countless leaders talk about this. Mm-hmm. I do many fireside chats as a means of I'm building the leadership bench at Fortune 50 companies. Mm-hmm. They all say this. You need to have the right people on your team. And you need to identify that early. And you need to remove people that are not on the change mission with you. They need to be maniacally focused and given the resources and the power in a positive way, but the resources and influence to do what they need to do, regardless of where they are kind of in that structure. But you really need to understand stakeholder management.
Yeah.
And that's a nuance unto itself. That is a very small, you know, when you kind of think of change management, it's a large area. The stakeholder management piece is, in my opinion, key. Without it, you're not going to get anywhere.
Well, it's really where you start to bring the intuitive and the emotional intelligence into the game, really, from my view. And I think that's perhaps why some leaders do find that quite challenging, is that that's not necessarily a side of self that they've had the opportunity to develop.
That is true. Mm. At the larger companies like a PepsiCo, a GE, a Honeywell, where you have kind of a university-led kind of culture, where there's leadership development programs, where they do kind of 360-degree feedback, where they work on the self, as you said, the emotional, Daniel Goleman's emotional intelligence work, and they do some self-inquiry and reflection, they seem to be more adept than the smaller organizations that might not have the resources to do this kind of work. And then there's the whole startup kind of culture where, you know, they're trailblazers running forward and they don't spend time on that. It's quite challenging.
Yes,
the context of the organization, the maturity of the business cycle, and where their leaders are is, so you get a lot, and we're talking a lot about succession planning here, because the organizations that have mastered succession planning, in my opinion, and what I've seen over 20 years, tend to have a bit more structure in place on that, and their leaders are a bit more adept at managing change.
Yeah, excellent insight. Rita, last question for you. We've talked a bit about where you've come from, and you're now halfway through the studies. What does the future look like? If we're future casting for you postdoctoral PhD, what do you want to be doing in the world of change? What's going to be exciting for you?
So I would say that's a great question, and thank you. I like that future thinking, future forecasting.
Yeah.
The purpose originally for doing the doctorate was to secure my position as an independent change practitioner and have the opportunity to be an adjunct business school professor where I can influence future change leaders. Mm-hmm. I also see in my own personal struggle that, you know, family care and child care for parents is really a challenge as leaders rise, young leaders make career to young leaders are rising in organizations today. And again, it comes down to really being strong at time management. You need to understand, you need to know your priorities and how you are going to figure out how to do these pieces and not get derailed by, I always say, noise. I do think that organizations and kind of larger bodies across globally, you know, the governments need to understand how they're going to support parents as well as caregivers of adult parents. Mm-hmm. And there needs to be a focus on family care. I know some countries are much further along in West Europe, perhaps in Australia where you are, maybe not as far along in the U.S. I certainly would welcome and love to be part of a task force, whether part of an organization or part, or in Washington, to really understand how we can solve this problem, because this is certainly a problem for our workforce and how managing child care and parent care is going to fit into this.
What a wonderful way to use your change skills. So I actually think we don't need to future cast that one. I think, you know, somebody could step right up and offer you a position on a task force in Washington tomorrow, Rita, and you'd be well up for it. Rita, it's been an absolute
joy
chatting to you. If people want to continue the conversation with you, what's the best way they can reach you? I know you're on Twitter. How can people reach out to you?
I think the best way, you know, I welcome the change chat on Twitter at Rita Meyerson. Mm-hmm. And you can also reach me via email, rita@ritameyerson.com, website on its way.
Yeah.
And let's hope that the doctorate is 3/4 of the way through and not halfway through. And you can search me out on that as well. And I'm just so pleased that we connected on Twitter and that I'm hopefully inspiring our change community in work that I've, you know, my life's work and what I am so passionate about. And I'm thrilled that you have created this forum for change leaders, change practitioners, and future change practitioners. It is so needed.
In the business community. Yeah, it's been great to chat. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed this Change Chat, then do share with your colleagues and friends. You can find more at conversationsofchange.com.au, at Jen Fram on Twitter, or Conversations of Change on the Facebook.